Hello and welcome to the Preachers Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm coming to you on a shockingly beautiful sunny day here in North Wales in the United Kingdom on the Rock where my wife Lisa and I live. It's been the typical British summer, I would suppose. We've just had a solid week of rain, but now things are looking up. In today's episode, I am really excited to bring you part two of my conversation that I had a few weeks ago with Bishop Mike Royal, and it was recorded at the home of Dr. Ash Barker, the Newbegin House, which is located in Birmingham, England, in Winston Green area of the city. And I'm really excited about this episode because we're going to get into American politics and we talk about social injustice and what that means for a Christian who desires to have a relevant faith. And this is something, if you listen to part one, Mike and I, our conversation ended by talking about whether or not Christianity is in fact relevant today. And I love the fact that Mike brings a unique perspective as a black African by way of Jamaica who grew up in London, but he's been all over the United Kingdom. He's been living in Birmingham for the last 11 years, and he is a committed social activist. He is a bishop of a Pentecostal church in Birmingham, and he is a mental health worker, and among other things, he does a lot of things in his community and in his way of understanding, and we talk about this in this episode, contextualizing theology, making it relevant for the person on the street. And the question then that we start this episode with is, you know, is the church in fact relevant today? And he says, actually, no. From the people he hears on the street level, the church has lost all of its credibility. And we get into this discussion about his perspective on the election and presidency of Donald Trump. And it's just an interesting point of view because coming from the United Kingdom, obviously not being American, it provides a different point of view, a different perspective on an issue that right now is obviously dividing America and even the rest of the world. Recently, of course, Donald Trump was in Hamburg, Germany for the G20 summit. And I don't know if you saw on the news, but there was, of course, large-scale protests in the streets there. Now, whether or not he actually makes an appearance here in the United Kingdom remains to be seen. I don't think he is going to come after all, but there were plans to have huge protests no matter when and where he popped up, whether it was in London to meet Theresa May or whatever. And it's just an interesting thing because as an American living abroad for nearly 12 years now, it's been interesting to gain a different perspective or different point of view on America, on the churches in America, and the American political system, talking to Brits in this country. And this is why I'm bringing this British accent series, because it's a different point of view, it's a different perspective, and this is really the aim of the Preachers Forum podcast. It's all about critical thinking about God, the church, and spirituality, and this is precisely the point. What better way to learn how to think critically than by being exposed to different and unique points of view that may challenge your own presuppositions. And in fact, on that note, I'm going to be launching a new series next week called Mind Shift, and I'll be talking a little bit more about what that's all about at the end of the interview with Mike Royal. Now, I just want to say at this point, before I get to the second half of my conversation with Bishop Mike Royal, that there are a variety of ways that you can contact me on social media, and I'll talk about that at the end of the show. Also, if you are interested in supporting the work of the Preachers Forum podcast, that would be great. You can find my Patreon page at patreon.com/Preachers Forum, and there's more information on what the vision of the show and my website, preachersforum.com, are all about. So I'll talk a little bit about that again at the end of the show. I don't need to spend too much time setting this interview up. If you listen to part one, then you'll have a good sense of where Bishop Mike Royal is coming from as a black theologian, bishop, biblical scholar, committed social activist. If you haven't listened to part one, I would really encourage you to go back and listen to that interview. It's a fantastic interview. And the thing I love about Mike the most is his passion. And you hear it coming out in his voice. He is extremely passionate about these issues that we get into. And that's what I love about him. And the fact that we literally just met that morning because of Dr. Ash Barker watching a rugby game over at Mike's house. One thing led to another, especially when I saw that picture of the black Jesus hanging on the wall. I thought, this guy has got to have a story. And sure enough, does he ever have a story? Let's get right into the conversation that I had with Bishop Mike Royal called Jesus Was Politically Black, Part 2.
From my understanding, coming from that North American point of view, the church in so many ways has lost its credibility in society, and especially in North America, where we see the church is so heavily involved in the political sphere. We don't see it as much, I think, in Great Britain.
Yeah.
There are some Christians who are heavily involved in politics here, but nothing like in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the evangelical Christians, as well as more maybe liberal, are also involved in government.
Yeah.
And there's a culture war going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you see it right now with what's happening with 81% of white evangelical voters voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
And overlooked all the, you know, integrity and credibility problems that he had. And now it's kind of coming back to bite him because people are going, you sold out.
Yeah, yeah,
you sold your soul.
So
we've lost something there.
So what I would say is that it didn't just overlook the personal integrity issues. It overlooks the injustice issues. And actually, as a black person, having studied black theology, having studied the civil rights movement, and how that has been a blueprint for many movements that have brought freedom around the world, including the anti-apartheid movement, as well in places like South Africa, then actually someone who stands against that everyone in the world would say, is a model of Christian contextual theology being outworked for people's liberation and freedom. I don't understand quite how you marry up, you know, what we have right now in terms of the presidency and that history in America. But you know what? I'd say each to their own, but I can tell you now that down on the street, the church has lost all credibility and it's going to be difficult to gain some of that back. But, you know, I think the key thing is that we can't keep working it out on the ground. And those of us who have a voice, speak out. And so I'm very happy to speak out when I see injustice and be seen to speak out. So that people in the world see, the church is standing up. The church has something to say. The church is being relevant. The church is doing something.
Even if it may cost you something.
Yeah.
It's got to. There's got to be a price to pay.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
For taking, anytime you take a stand. They shot Martin Luther King.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
So they shut him down.
Let me give you an example. When the whole Muslim bang thing came in, do you know, I thought to myself, do you know what? I was so sick and tired of seeing all kinds of big preachers being wheeled out onto the platform and put on Channel 4. That's one of our channels here in the UK. And this is evangelical Christianity. And this is how it's supporting Donald Trump. I thought, hold on a minute. Not all of us feel like that. In fact, it's a whole raft of people who are uncomfortable with this. So I had an opportunity. I was run by a head of religious affairs of one of our TV companies. I went on 14 radio stations in 2 hours around the country, speaking out as a Pentecostal bishop and saying, this is wrong. We should not treat our neighbours like this. I've got wonderful neighbours. They are Muslim. They are great people. If I tell you about these folks, wonderful business people, but also wonderful family people who have actually taken time to foster children as well. They are no different from me in terms of people who are just wanting to get on in life and get on with their neighbours. Why should they be treated like that when they arrive at an American border? I'm sorry, I stand against it.
You're speaking out, and rightly so. I mean, I've kind of stopped ranting on Facebook for those very reasons, because it just, I get so wound up by the very same kind of things, because you think, how does that, we call ourselves in America a Christian nation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yet we're turning away the stranger, the immigrant, the orphan. These are all biblical values.
And so I would say, don't rant, but do challenge.
Yeah.
Don't ever stop challenging. That's what I would encourage you with, Clint. Don't stop challenging. And what's interesting is that, you know, recently we had all kinds of people saying stuff, and then suddenly here in the UK, Grenfell Tower happens. And around the world, all the cameras are on the UK, and what we have is an edifice that stands as a monument against all the injustice that has built up from the 1980s in this country, and ends up with people being killed, dying in something, quite frankly, that should never have happened. And I just think suddenly all these voices that had a lot to say suddenly go quiet, and they've got nothing to say. And then when it comes out in the news, they'll pop their heads back up. And actually, it's in that deafening silence that the voice of faith has to be heard. And I'm certainly one of those voices, one of many voices that are speaking out and seeking to gather momentum that we can activate against those kinds of injustices.
It's true, isn't it? It's when something like the Grenfell Towers happens that everyone's pointing fingers now, you know, and ducking responsibility.
Yeah,
but the fact that someone said to me the other day, well, he said, all you need to know is that kind of thing doesn't happen to rich people. You know, and you think, okay, here's essentially a council estate. Corners were cut. Money was saved on the cladding of it that should have been fireproof and all the rest of it.
It is a direct result of austerity. It is. It's a direct result of austerity. We're the fifth largest economy in the world. My friends, we can do better than that.
Yeah. How does this happen in this day and age?
How does this happen in 2017 in the fifth largest economy in the world? We need to hang our heads in shame.
Yeah, we're seeing how it's happening now, but, you know, documents are being shredded and, you know, things are disappearing.
You better know it.
But heads are gonna roll over this thing, you know, and it's our shame, isn't it?
I hope that there is justice at every level, both those who need to be held to account for the decisions that they're taking and the cost-cutting measures that have caused this, but also justice has been done in terms of those who were still alive in that community getting the kind of housing and living conditions that they deserve. And let me just say this finally. This idea that this tower is full of people who are on the dole is an absolute nonsense. Anyone will tell you living in London, you can't live if you're not working. These guys are working hard, hard, hard. So when I hear that the social housing units as part of a wider development that might have been bought by rich people, suddenly those rich people are saying, we don't want these people living here. I'm saying, hello, what are you talking about? Actually, I'm saying, bye-bye, move out, because they have every right to be there. Actually, guess what? Most of them were there in that community well before you came along.
Yeah, they've been there for years. Yeah, I mean, you need to work two or three jobs. It's so expensive in London, isn't it? It's
seriously
incredibly.
Every
time we go down there, you know, we order a pint,
it's
and it's
crazy.
£5 or £6 at a pub. We're paying £2 of where I live in the northwest of England, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
North Wales, and we think, wow, Yeah. I mean, it's shocking how expensive it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, really. You know? Yeah, really.
But you got to do what you have to do to get by.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was, as it's turning out now, we're finding out there was a huge, it was a massive ethnic population in that building.
Yeah, yeah.
You had Asians, Africans, all kinds of people, Syrian refugees living in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and what's going to happen now? Well, they're doing investigations around the country to figure out what's, you know, there's maybe hundreds of other tower blocks that have similar situations.
It's opened up a can of worms.
Yeah.
But my question is this, how many other can of worms are there ready to be opened? And my other question is, what will it take for those cans to be opened? Will it take another set of deaths like that?
Hopefully not.
I pray not.
Yeah.
I pray not.
I guess in some ways, as sad as those stories are, you have the Manchester bombing that was recent up around our way. Of course, the two recent London terror attacks and then this Grenfell Tower thing. But the response is amazing. That does sort of lift your heart a bit in humanity, you know, where people are housing the homeless and donating money and, you know, helping those victims and families.
I mean, actually, it's been three London attacks. So two of them have been Muslim extremism, and one of them has been right-wing extremism. And all of them have involved lives being lost as a result. And, you know, I'll just say this. Before I'm a Christian, I'm a human. Before I'm a Christian, I'm a human. Before, you know, I'm a black British guy, I'm a human. You know, before I'm an African, I'm a human. And, gosh, we just need to get our humanity back.
Something's been fundamentally lost. And this is the whole thing. What in the world has Christianity become? What you just said is so profound. And I think, what is the church? Like talking about in North America, I mean, we've got mega churches of 20, 30,000 people, multi-million-dollar budgets, multi-million-dollar facilities. Meanwhile, people are literally within, you know, meters, yards away, starving, homeless, and yet we're plowing all this money into private jets for people, televangelists who have their own airports in their own backyards. How in the world did we get to that? There's such an inequality between that and humanity, as you just said.
Yeah, and no one is saying here that people shouldn't make profits. No one is saying that people shouldn't be entrepreneurial. But my question always is, am I my brother's keeper? Am I my sister's keeper? Yes, I am.
Full stop. That's it. Yeah. There's nowhere to go from there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once you face that reality, then what do you have to do? If you said you strip away all the labels that society puts on, the color of your skin, your lineage, your accent, you know, and this is something that we've in this series we've talked about with other people. As soon as they hear an accent, they'll immediately slot you into a box.
Yeah.
You know, you're from London, you're from Liverpool, you're from Manchester. Oh, you know, that's it. You've been judged and put on the shelf.
Yeah.
You know, and yet you strip off. But isn't that what the gospel says?
Yeah. No,
we are all one in Christ. There's no Jew, no Greek, no slave, no free, no male. You take all those labels that the world wants to put on people and say, no, we're humans at the end of the day.
Absolutely. We are first and foremost, and we just need to get our humanity.
And somehow, what is the church's role in that statement? If it's about getting, like you say, bums on seat, as they say, getting people to sit in the pew and donate their money and prop up the system, you know, that can't be the whole picture.
No, when I read the Bible, there is definitely a bias in the Bible towards the poor and the needy and the downtrodden. I think you're going to read the Bible with a big tippex bowl to read it any other way. And so we have to be journeying alongside those who are dispossessed and together finding a way of how we find a voice and how we get justice for all. And when we do that, we learn much more actually than we give. We really, really do. And our propensity to love other and to embrace other also increases. And that's what the Bible is all about. That's what made Jesus so special.
You mentioned the word contextual theology a bit ago. Isn't that what you're just articulating now? You're saying if we don't contextualize and make it relevant in this day and age,
yeah,
what have we got? What are we left with? A bunch of abstract bullet points that we have to agree with.
Yeah.
Now you're a Christian. Here's your golden ticket. You're going to heaven. There's got to be so much more than that.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's not formulaic. It is organic. And I think we just need to be real and organic in the way we live out our faith on a daily basis. And if we do that, then people will just naturally come into the kingdom.
It's got to be compelling. That's my whole thing, you know, and that's going back to the early church in Acts.
Yeah.
Whatever they had, that vibe, that energy was attractional.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and it was compelling.
Yeah.
People came in, their needs were being met, and all these amazing things, people were being healed. It didn't matter if you were rich, poor, whatever class, level of society. They didn't say, now, wait a minute, you're a prostitute.
Yeah.
No, you've got to go out the other side. No, we're not going to deal with you. They dealt with everybody.
What I would say, Clint, is what they did do is that they challenged injustice when they saw it within the church. So classically, if you read Galatians, Paul challenges Peter kind of around this whole thing of you can't be one thing with your Jewish friends and another thing with your Gentile friends, if this is going to be real. And equally, Paul is challenged by James and the church at Jerusalem. Yeah, go and preach the gospel, but remember the poor. So there was challenge from within the church. And boy, do we need this in 2017 in the global church, and particularly to the Western church right now.
And I read somewhere on Facebook the other day, someone said, you know, why are so many millennials leaving the church? I mean, he said, the last several services I've been to, the person up there preaching it's always about what they're against. We're against homosexuality. We're against abortion. We're against this. We're against that. And he says, are you for anything?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
When's the last time someone talked about helping the poor, standing up against racism and discrimination in society? And he says, I'm not interested. If all you're going to do is tell me what you're against,
mm-hmm.
Are you for anything?
Yeah.
And apparently not. So, as you say, they've lost the credibility.
Yeah, and they've left the church, but they've not necessarily left God.
Exactly. That's the trend right now. People are leaving the church, but they're not necessarily giving up the faith in God.
And don't get me wrong in emphasizing that, because I believe in church. I'm committed to go to church. You know, when I'm not at my own church, I'm at another church speaking. And so I'm absolutely committed to the Church of Jesus Christ. I believe it's God's plan A and there's no plan B. But we have got to be creating something that people are drawn to for what it stands for and not just what it stands against.
Yeah, it's a sad truth that
especially, and I think as well, we've got to find ways of not othering people, but rather one anothering. Because that is what the Bible is all about. It really is about one anothering. And so I get concerned when our default disposition is what we're against rather than what we're for.
Yeah, and it seems to be the case. I mean, I remember Richard Rohr saying, I was watching him on a YouTube video, and he went to a church in the States. It was in the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And he went and spoke at this predominantly white middle-class mm-hmm. church. Okay. Then he noticed as he was looking around the neighborhood, there were two other churches mm-hmm. next door to the white
mm-hmm.
upper class, middle class church. Mm-hmm. One was a Hispanic church.
Mm-hmm.
The other was an African American church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was asking the people at this white church where he was speaking, he says, you know, do you do anything with the other two mm-hmm. churches? They said, oh, no. You know, they have different beliefs and whatever. And he said, you know, we're sitting here about to take communion, and yet clearly, the message of communion hasn't impacted you on a deep inward spiritual level. Otherwise, if there really was communion, mm-hmm. these three separate churches that have nothing to do with each other because of the ethnic background, color mm-hmm. of their skin, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you'd be working together. You'd be mm-hmm. on that level of humanity. Mm-hmm. And so you wonder why the world is looking at the church and going, well, there you go. There's the message right there.
Absolutely. And that's why it's such a joy to be here with you, Clint. Here I am, black British guy of Jamaican origin. Here you are, you know, a guy living in Wales from Portland, Oregon, you know, sitting in the house of a guy who's from Australia, Melbourne, via Thailand, and finds himself here in Winsome Green. That's the kingdom.
That's it. That's what I said to Mike
more
on the way
common,
over here.
More in common, man. More in common.
We just met this morning, and it just so happened that we were over there watching a rugby match. And it has nothing to do with the game. It had to do with that connection, as you say, between Ash, myself, you, that's been made. How does it happen? It's completely organic. And I heard a little voice in my head say, you need to interview Mike, you know? Oh. And you were free. You were available. So this has been amazing. I'm so glad that you had the time to come over. I love the passion. That's what I really am attracted to, that passion.
Yeah.
You can hear it coming out in your voice.
Clint, the pleasure is all mine. And it's just been great to have this conversation today.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. I will say Bishop Mike Royal. I know he didn't want to use that title, but it's, to me, that word is great. I love that, you know. Bishop Mike Royal, thank you so much for being on this podcast. I think we're going to have great feedback, so we'll definitely stay in touch.
Thank you, Clint. Great to be part of this today. God bless you.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining me for the second half of my conversation with Bishop Mike Royal. And I love what Mike was talking about in the interview when we began talking about the American political system and specifically the election of Donald Trump. And you know what's interesting about the whole thing is, to me, it ties in with this question of whether or not the church is relevant today. And Mike says, no, it's not. And I think you can tie this in with not only the election of Donald Trump, but also the continued support by some 80-81% of mainly white evangelical American Christians. And perhaps the most disturbing part about it is how so many overlooked, as Mike says, not only the integrity issues that Donald Trump clearly had as a candidate, but also the injustice issues. And now we're seeing that. And you think about how to restore the humanity aspect when we're doing things like a Muslim ban, when Mike says, you know, these people are just humans. They love, they have emotions, they're just like me. They just happen to be a different religion than me, but they have the same wants, needs, desires, etc. And so, of course, Bishop Mike Royal speaks out against things like Trump's travel ban, which, despite all the rhetoric around it, seems to be aimed primarily at stopping Muslims or individuals from certain Muslim countries from coming into America. And, of course, you have the proposal to build a wall across the U.S.-Mexico border, again, banning immigrants from coming into the United States. Now, we might disagree or agree on strictly a level of policy, but what does this have to do with this issue of the church being relevant today? At least in North America, the church, as Mike Royal says, has basically lost its credibility. And in making the connection with a person like President Donald Trump, and that 80 or 81% of white evangelical voters who helped to get him elected and even now continue to support him despite the many scandals and so forth, you get people like Pastor Robert Jeffress, for example, making statements about Donald Trump in a sermon, saying things like at the Kennedy Center concert recently, Jeffress said, quote, "He, Donald Trump, has exceeded our every expectation, and we thank God every day that he gave us a leader like Donald Trump," end quote. That's what First Baptist pastor Robert Jeffress said in a recent sermon. And he also preached a sermon back in January when Donald Trump had just been elected in Washington, D.C., and he actually took an example from the book of Nehemiah in the Old Testament, and he applied it to the situation today and encouraged President-elect Trump, who was in attendance at the church. He said, quote, "God is not against building walls," end quote. So that's the kind of rhetoric and sentiment
that's coming forth from at least a certain segment of American evangelical Christianity who elected him, helped get him elected, and continues to support him, seeing him as the one who is going to safeguard that religious freedom that Christians in America, or at least a segment, are so desperately thinking they're in need of. And unfortunately, although that block of white evangelical voters and supporters may have gotten their man elected, unfortunately what they're not seeing is they've lost the culture war, or at least they're in the process of losing that culture war. And perhaps many of them are failing to look down the road and question, where is this whole thing going to end when either Donald Trump gets impeached, perhaps, or his presidency is over? Where's that going to leave the church? Is the church going to be in America in a better place in terms of its relationship with society and the poor and the disadvantaged and the marginalized of society, or are they going to be generally in a worse place? So this is just food for thought. These things are what makes me think when I hear a guy like Bishop Mike Royal and his views on social activism, injustice, and speaking truth to power, and specifically what that means from a relevant Christian point of view in our world today. Hopefully it's challenged you and made you think a bit more critically about some of these issues. If it has, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me on a variety of different social media platforms. You can follow me on Twitter, at Preachers Forum, and it's the same on Instagram, at Preachers Forum. You can always send me an email and I'll respond to you, preachersforum@gmail.com. You can stop by and like my Facebook page, facebook.com/The Preachers Forum. You can also have a look at my website, preachersforum.com, if you're interested in exploring this issue of the history of fundamentalism and liberalism, the origins of the Christian right, why so many people in America voted for and continue to support Donald Trump. I did a whole series of articles dealing with the history of these movements and kind of tracing where we find ourselves today in terms of American religion and politics specifically. And again, this is the aim of the Preachers Forum podcast and website, critical thinking about God, the church, and spirituality. If you appreciate what I'm trying to do and you want to support me financially, I would really appreciate it. You can find my Patreon page and support me for as little as $1 a month. And you can find it at patreon.com/preachersforum. And there's some more information on there about the vision of why I'm doing this podcast and why I continue to do the website. For as little as $1 a month, that gets you access to a private Facebook Preachers Forum podcast group where we have great conversations in a safe and non-judgmental space. All right, there's just one last thing I want to say before the show ends, and that is I'm going to be putting this British accent series on hold for a while. We are going to be launching a brand new series coming next Friday, and it's called Mind Shift, and it's all about different ways of thinking, and the first episode is going to be a conversation that my wife Lisa and I had about the power of positivity. So if that sounds interesting and intriguing to you, be sure and check back next Friday for the first episode of Mind Shift. And we're going to be talking about a wide variety of different topics, including leadership and theoclasms with Gary Hayes, who was on one of my British Accents podcasts. Again, I brought him back and we had an absolutely fantastic conversation about theoclasms and what that means. So that's coming up in a few weeks. So once again, thank you for listening in to the second half of my conversation with Bishop Mike Royal. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. Be sure and join us next week for the first episode of Mind Shift, the new series, starting right here on the Preachers Forum podcast.